Well, hello everybody again, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
Today we're going to have an episode discussion of a quote-unquote, I don't think any quotes need to be necessary for this, controversial episode entitled The Postmodern Prometheus, Season 5. And this is going to be an interesting topic because, as Jen and I have discussed before, I really like this episode and Jen really does not like this episode, which I feel like that's kind of our thing.
It's turning into it.
We haven't really found one that you like that I hate. So
you just like everything. You are more forgiving than I am.
I really am. I really am, and I'm really looking forward to talking about this because I know exactly why people don't like this episode, and I'm ready to talk about it.
Yes.
But before we get into that sort of nitty-gritty, I think we should say definitely a kind of more experimental episode here, written and directed by Chris Carter. This is, as people might remember, the black and white episode. I think that's what the first thing that people think of, I think, when people remember this episode.
And it's, I know, very distinct.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. I mean, you can't argue with that, right? Yes.
It is gorgeous. Yeah, there's things about postmodern Prometheus that I like a lot. No question. This isn't sort of, I wouldn't put this in the category of like Bad Blood, that there's not very much that I like about Bad Blood. I really don't like that episode. But there are certain aspects of this episode that I like quite a lot, and the look of it is right up there. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful. I tweeted, you know, I rewatched this a few months ago, and at that point I tweeted out, it makes me wish they had gone back and done every episode of The X-Files in black and white because it looks so gorgeous.
Oh my God. I would love that. I would watch the entire series in black and white. I mean, I'm sure
they should have done the whole thing like that.
I'm sure you could just turn the filter on your TV, but they did film this with a special lens.
They did, right?
Yeah. And I can't think off the top of my head what they actually filmed it with, but it was definitely one of the, maybe like a fisheye lens or something like that, that kind of made the backgrounds kind of look a little bit less sharp, like, you know, like the actual characters in the front, and they look closer.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, especially those close-up shots when they're looking directly at the camera, it's just very unique. I think overall too, I'm a real fan of any time they kind of go against the grain and do something experimental, and you're kind of not a fan of that. So
I'm not generally a fan of that. No, although I again, comparing this with Bad Blood, I object less to this. I like, actually, I think that the sort of the look of it, that experimentation paid off really well.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about this episode compared with Bad Blood is Mulder and Scully are still in character in the episode, throughout the episode. Everything around them is crazy, but they're still Mulder and Scully. So I can still have some love for this episode.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It is kind of interesting to bring that up too, because I remember that was like one of your big, like, people talk a lot about the idea of this whole episode being some sort of dream or some sort of fictional scenario, and I actually don't think that's the case. I think we could talk about that later, but we're gonna treat it though today as if it is an episode that happened.
I think we can.
Okay, and I want to say, too, right off the top, that I constantly talk about my biggest problem with this show being not necessarily the content, but the execution. And I think this is probably one of those rare instances where I think the execution was perfect, and it's the content that people have a little bit of have a little bit of issues with. But I think before we get into that, I want to talk about the plot. Because you had some questions, and I am here today for the argument that a lot of people misunderstand the plot of this episode overall.
Yes.
And actually what's happened and what's going on. And I think because of those misunderstandings, people draw conclusions that I think are unfair. So I want you to tell me, because you were texting me earlier and you were saying that there were things that you just straight up didn't understand or didn't get. I want to know. So let me know.
Yeah, I said that. I mean, I've lost track how many times I've watched this episode. I mean, I've been watching it since 2007, so I don't know how many. Or 1997, pardon me. Oh, I wish it was 2007, but I'm older than that. It took me many years to even start to grasp what was actually supposed to be happening in this plot. I think I was so used to just kind of like letting it all wash over me, the wackiness and the sort of gorgeous cinematography and everything. And I was always sort of left at the edge, just sort of gently scratching my head.
Yeah.
And I wrote down in my notes today, what actually happened here? Because I still don't fully quite understand. Now, one thing that we did text about today that I have finally grasped. It took me several years to get it. But the great mutato, I don't think, is involved in any kind of nefarious business in these sort of, let's call them home invasions.
Yeah.
It's his former dad.
Yeah.
Adopted dad, doing something. So here's the fundamental question is the same question that I have that, Shayna also has, Shayna, what was her last name? Berkowitz, mm-hmm. Shayna Berkowitz, which is, who is the father? Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Are we to think that the farm animals are it, this is like some kind of an animal human hybrid that's created here?
Yes.
And there is no human father.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what to make of the mutato babies at the end. Not sure what to make of that.
Yeah, that's different again.
But, the intention is, I would say, let's use Izzy as an example.
Yeah.
That it's pretty clear to me that the pig is supposed to be the quote-unquote father.
Yes.
And all the people in the town have actually been victims of these experiments.
Yes.
So it's
or
one
most of them.
At least not all of them. Several. Yeah. Of them. I mean, they make a point, and I have access to the script. I have made some excerpts of things that the script say that I think kind of shed some light on this. When Mulder goes into the diner, and you know, everybody looks kind of weird. This is also one of those things that I think it actually reads better than it does. Visualize, like, because it's hard to watch that and not make a judgment and not be like, why are all these people so weird looking, and then feel guilty for thinking that. But I feel like that's kind of part of the genius of the episode, because it's sort of making you sort of subvert your own, you know, judgments, and like have to like make yourself convince yourself that these people are weird looking when maybe you're feeling not so great about thinking that. But they're supposed to be weird looking. In the script it says, indeed, everyone is staring at Mulder and smiling, which is strange, but made even stranger by the fact that everyone looks right out of a Fellini movie or touring sideshow.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very intentional that all these people are supposed to be strange. I mean, I think at the end of the episode, they really do kind of bring it home, but you're so, I think, distracted by the bizarre nature of everything that's going on, that maybe people don't quite pick up on the fact that, the reporter is supposed to be like from a chicken.
The chicken.
And the other guy is supposed to be like from a goat. And I think the cool, I'm going to say cool because this is a fictional television show. Idea is that like Mutato, it cuts to Mutato and he says, all these experiments were failures. And I mean, in the end, you're like, wait a minute. Those were the ones that worked. Yeah. And so I just think, again, there's so many like layers to this when you're looking at it and you're like, well, you know, he thought all these were failures because he couldn't make a mate for his son. But he ended up making, you know, vis-a-vis questionable methods, other human people who had lives and families and people that ended up loving them. And I mean, it isn't, when you kind of step back and you look at the whole thing, it's a very sort of tragic ending. Like, in a way, I mean, take out the share thing. The whole idea that like, all after all of it, his father's dead and it's like, nope, no mate for you. You're done. And I mean, I don't know. This is all going to have to kind of come off the heels of our other discussion, because it's hard to kind of, when you are fundamentally misunderstanding this episode as to think that the Mutato literally went into these houses, raped these women and made babies, then of course you're going to think this is a horrifying thing. Yeah. And it's terrible that he was taken to a Cher concert. But that's not what happened. There is no evidence whatsoever supporting that is the narrative they're trying to get across here. And I'm the first one to say here, I'm not going to say that the Mutato is not culpable. I think he's somewhat culpable, but no more than an accomplice.
Right.
I think they made it very clear that the grandfather, not Polidori, but the old man, was the one in there doing the science, doing the experiments. And Mutato was in there dancing around a chair. Like,
Yeah, I totally. I mean, it took me a long time to figure that out, but I agree. The problem I have with that is, I think there's good reasons why people are confused by this episode, because I think that we are meant to believe. I think the information we're kind of led to believe throughout much of the episode is that it is the Great Mutado who is in fact going in and, I don't know, having a sexual assault or something like that, that something is happening and that he is responsible, because he's the one we see in the house. And there's like a shot of him going up the stairs at one point, we presume to the bedroom. And so while it turns out that he is in fact innocent for the most part, we're kind of given it as a red herring throughout the episode that, oh, look at him. He is like some kind of a sicko rapist type. And so I can see why people would be just a little too convinced. I think the fact that people are confused and that I'm confused is maybe a sign that they didn't hit those narrative points quite as hard as they should in terms of conveying that story.
I can agree with that. And I think, too, that this is also, it's also obvious. It's an obvious storytelling device. They want to maintain the mystery until the end. I mean, they don't want you to know what's going on. And I mean, like I always say with this show, when anyone sort of points out a failing, I always have to be like, you got to watch it again. You got to watch it again, because all the threads are there. All the answers are there. And I mean, I guess that's the question. Is it on the show that you missed it, or is it on you?
I'd say that it's on both. Just to pretend that it's not all my fault. I know it is. I mean, you're right. If you watch it carefully, you can say, oh, okay, that's not the Great Mutado's fault. But how carefully do you have to watch it? My argument would be that you have to pick it up on the first viewing, or there's something missing. And that's fine it's not a big deal to me. In fact, you know, it's great. And when it comes to like, oh, I missed that whole sort of alien subplot the first time through watching this episode.
Or like an Easter egg or something.
Easter egg or something like that. Then like, it's great when, I love it when shows reward rewatches, because how many rewatches have we had of X-File episodes?
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason why we keep doing it. There's a reason why there's still a great, you know, Throwback Thursday X-Files episode viewing every Thursday on Twitter. There's a reason why people still enjoy watching these episodes, because it does reward rewatching. Mm-hmm. But the challenge here is when you're dealing with a subject like implied sexual assault, you better be damn careful how you tell that story. You don't really want to leave too many threads out there. And it's a bit risky when you're dealing with such a sensitive subject matter to tell it in a slightly ambiguous way. And that's the risk they took here that maybe didn't totally pay off.
I can totally see that. And I think there, you also need to take into account, I hate to say this, but we're in such a different time right now.
Yeah,
even than they were when they made this episode. And I mean, it's really shameful to have to say that, but it's the truth. I mean, I will watch romantic comedies from like the mid 90s and cringe at some of the ways that they've treated women's issues as maybe just slightly less important as we would hope they would treat them. But I mean, again, and I'm not here to defend that, because I think you're right in that. I think that when it's something that important, they need to maybe not be so ambiguous, and maybe be ambiguous with some of the other stuff, but maybe don't be so ambiguous with something like that, especially considering the climate. I take into account the climate of when this episode came out, which was different. And I also kind of want to say, too, that like, I think, oh, I totally just lost my train of thought. I hate
That's
when
okay.
that happens.
Can I jump in with some more plot questions while you get back on the train?
I'm trying to get back on the train, man.
So let me see if I've got this straight in terms of what this whole shenanigans was. Dr. Polidori, who's like the mad scientist, he creates the Great Mutado by mistake when doing his like genetics experiments and kind of abandons him or something. The farmer, who is also Dr. Polidori's father,
correct,
adopts the Great Mutado.
Mm-hmm.
And then Farmer Dad has this, I guess, idea that he's going to create a mate for the Great Mutado by, I guess, replicating those experiments to create something that looks like him, maybe, with that intention. Like, the only sort of creature that would want him is one like him.
Yeah.
And so Farmer Dad is out there trying to recreate that, and it's with unsatisfactory results,
as he says. Yes.
And, okay, good. So far, I'm with you. Now, and this is my last, well, it's not really going to be my last question, but the final piece of the puzzle that will make me understand this, I think, is what's going on with, like, is he, who's under arrest at the end exactly? I mean, the Great Mutato appears to be in Mulder and Scully's custody.
Okay.
Is Dr. Polidori also under arrest?
Oh, absolutely.
It sounds like, okay, so he's arrested for the murder.
He is the one who's, well, he's arrested for the murder, and I believe he's taking the brunt of the blame for everything that has gone on.
For creating all the bad stuff that's happened.
Because I mean, in the end, it's all his fault. But like, I think one of those. This is also kind of where we have to sort of step back and suspend our disbelief, because they're trying to tell us a story about. It's like a Frankenstein story. You know, this is what a Frankenstein story is. I mean, that's the plot of the episode. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm like, okay, well, that's what they're trying to do. And they're doing it kind of in a, maybe in today's climate, problematic way. But in the end, it's like they're making experiments. You know what I mean? Like, that's how they're going to, that's how it's going to happen. I know I'm getting off track again, but does that kind of explain?
No. I mean, because it does.
This is going to actually lead us into the I have a lot more to say about all of that stuff, but I think we should talk about the ending, because I think a lot of people might have a problem with this episode because
let's jump into the ending
because of the ending. Okay, because
can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
All right, this will feed into the ending. Mm-hmm. But are we to think that the Great Mutato has in fact been arrested for a crime, and if so, what crime is that likely to be? Like some kind of a, like you were suggesting, like an accomplice, trespass, something like that?
I honestly think that I think that what they're coming in the end for is the murder of the old man, honestly.
Oh, okay.
I feel
So the Great Mutato is somehow tied up with that murder situation.
I think, here's the thing.
I think he volunteers to confess to the murder, I think, at one point, even though he didn't commit it.
Yeah, no, he does. And I have a feeling this is actually one of those things that I think they should have made a little bit more clear. Because, I mean, at the very, very beginning of the episode, I mean, Mulder does make a point to say, because Scully's like, you know, we're getting jerked around here. Why are we out here? Whatever. You know, and he does say, you know, this is a very serious crime. And so right off the top, they are telling us that what has happened is a serious crime. And there have been no murders that have taken place. The only crimes that have been taken place are the violation / assault / impregnation, whatever you want to call it, of the women that we don't really know of, other than Shayna, right? At the very beginning, she's the only one that we really know of, and then later we find out there were probably all kinds. But I did want to, actually, this is when I lost my train of thought, this is what I wanted to say earlier. There is a line here, because you were talking about Polidori getting taken off to jail, sort of kind of for the murder, but I think he's also sort of, like Mulder says at the end, the evil scientist pays for his crime, and the monster is supposed to escape, because in the end, the monster is supposed to be a victim. That's kind of where we're supposed to be left at with this story. There's a line from the Mutato that was cut, where he says to Polidori at the end scene, "I intended to reason. This passion is detrimental to me, for you do not reflect that you are the cause of its excess." And then Mulder says, "That's exactly what the monster said to Dr. Frankenstein." I mean, they probably cut it because I'm like,
spells it right up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they cut it because we kind of got it at that point.
Yeah, maybe just a little too much, like on the notes.
Yeah, but I mean, I think to me that is sort of the show trying to tell us that, hey, someone's getting punished for all of this. It's Polidori.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the Mutato, because I don't think he was actually in there doing anything. That's my read on this entire situation. Again, even if you, I don't see any evidence otherwise. I just really don't. Especially at the end, like, we are clearly supposed to sympathize with this character. And he says in his speech, "I never acted to harm another soul."
Yes, that's how it starts, I think.
Yeah, I think that's that's how his speech starts. And so, and I think we're supposed to believe him. You know, I feel
we are supposed we're definitely supposed to sympathize with him.
Yeah.
For sure. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
Although he is in custody, I think, at the end, though, for some kind of crime.
No, he absolutely is, because I think they realize he does. And then he does cop to having been an accomplice, because he says in our trespass, or what we did, we said what we did was wrong. But in our trespasses, we gave you a loving son. I think that's what he says.
Yep.
I think that that's the point where he admits to the fact that he's been a party to this. And he is. I'm not sitting here saying he hasn't been. I just think that people, when they think of this episode and they think of the ending and it gives them all these icky feelings, I think that people misinterpret this character as a rapist. And I don't think that that is the intent.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all. I think it's kind of like, basically, he's portrayed as something of a rapist throughout much of the episode, but then Yank at the end turns out he's not.
Right. And I mean,
but by that time, maybe you've kind of tuned out because you're like kind of like turned off by the whole thing. Who knows?
And that's very true. I think that could, but that could be, that could totally be true.
It's certainly not what the episode is as it's written.
And I think, too, we should talk about the idea of the ending. We're about to talk about the ending. Izzy being sort of the writer of this entire episode, because this is his story. And the fact that they're about to take Mutato to jail, and Mulder says, "I want to speak to the writer." And then it turns to Izzy. He's like, "This is not the way this is supposed to end." Yeah. And so I have a question, too, about. Oh, this is what I was going to say, too. Izzy is the writer of the story, and he says he's no monster. Like, at the very end, he's the one who has the line that is telling us, the audience, he's not a monster. He's just he's just a dude that he's a misunderstood, quote unquote, monster with pathos, I would say. I would describe him as that. And that sort of leads me into my interpretation of the ending. Because I feel like at the very, very end, and I would say throughout this whole episode, we're supposed to be sort of seeing Mulder's point of view of this entire thing going down. He's the one who's kind of guiding Scully through, hey, what he thinks is going on. And I know that happens a lot of the time. But I think at the very, very end, when he says, this isn't the way that the story is supposed to end, I think it's very possible that from that moment... Mm-hmm. Either from that moment to the end, that's sort of an alternate ending.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
In Mulder's mind, like this is how this should end, and so this is what Izzy writes in his comic book instead of the real sort of tragic ending where in real life, sad world, he ends up just going to jail and dealing with the consequences. Which I think probably happens. I think you can look at it either way. You can look at it like this Cher concert did happen, and it was a sort of last minute. Hail Mary sort of attempt for Mulder to give this poor guy some compassion before he then inevitably gets sent off to jail right when we cut to black.
Right.
Which I think is probably what happens, whether you think this ending is a real ending or a fake ending.
Yeah.
So how do you interpret the ending?
That's exactly how I interpret it, too. I hadn't thought of it as being from Mulder's point of view, but that's, you make a strong case because, the episode is... kind of largely seen through his eyes now that I think about it.
Yeah.
So it'd make perfect sense that it's kind of his sort of fantasy version of how it ends. And because everything that happens right after that point where he says, "I want to speak to the writer," is just a little too happy. It's a change in tone from the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of the episode is wacky and unusual. But it's not necessarily like a super happy episode.
There's not
like
at all.
Murders. There are murders happening and violations and all kinds of terrible things. And then, like you say, the true ending is actually quite a sad ending. But then suddenly we get like this everything super happy starts happening. It's all like everyone gets everything they want. You know, Mulder's high-fiving the Great Mutato at the concert. Everything's just a little over the top. Mm-hmm. The Jerry Springer crowd is giving a standing ovation to these little baby Mutatos.
Yeah.
And Mom is saying, you know, "What's not to love," which is like the same line that Cher says in that clip of The Mask that they're watching earlier in the episode. And of course, you know, Mulder and Scully get what they want, too, because they're dancing.
Right. I mean, that's kind of, in a way, I mean, people might get upset at me for saying that, oh, maybe this last final couple minutes, few minutes is a dream or a fantasy slash sequence of Mulder's. But I'm like, I think it's just as shippy if that's the way Mulder wants the story to end, right?
Absolutely. Like, if that really happened or if that's just what one or both of them want to happen, I'm happy either way.
Part of me honestly kind of likes it better because it, and I don't want to say out of character. I don't think it's out of character for the dancing to have happened, but it does seem, like you said, a little bit heightened, like a little over, everything's like over the top at the end there and like overly happy. And I think that's probably one of the reasons people have such a problem with it. So, I mean, if, like I said, none of the evidence points to the fact that Mutato raped or even touched anyone. But, you know, even if we're going to say that that happened, if you want to, like, live with yourself in this episode, if you tell yourself that this final few minutes is Mulder's, the way Mulder would like to see the story end, because I believe it. Mulder is the one who has the compassion for the monsters with pathos. Like, he sees the humanity, he sees Mutato for what he is, you know, and that's the way he would want the story to end. I really like that interpretation.
Yeah.
And
I like it. Even, I like that interpretation a lot.
And you even see Mutato's hand closing the book at the end.
You do. And it's interesting. And of course, and as Mulder and Scully are dancing, we get that turns into that sort of comic book image. Mm-hmm. I was also going to point out that Scully is smiling way too much in that scene for it to be anything other than a fantasy, because we see more Scully smiling in that scene than we see for probably the entire previous five seasons.
I would agree.
It's a glorious thing, I just want to say.
I am actually now completely in on this. I'm in on this theory.
Yeah. No, I definitely think that it's just that one final scene. I think it can be a little confusing. A lot of everything about this episode is confusing to me, obviously. But I was confused for many years because it is such an unusual episode. It's shot so unusually. And so it's easy just to kind of write off the whole episode as being kind of a dream sequence of some kind, because, and then like the ending really like hammers it home kind of thing. But when I sort of looked at it a bit more carefully in more recent years, I started to realize there is a real sort of distinct break when we have that I want to speak to the writer and how different the rest of the episode is from there. So I think that's like a fantastical sequence of some kind, however you want to interpret it, whether it's Mulder's fantasy or just everybody's fantasy somehow coming together. I think it's definitely a fantastical ending that didn't necessarily happen, but like you say, it doesn't make it any less impactful. Somehow I like it even better that way, because otherwise it just seems a little, like you say, a little too happy and not quite, it just doesn't quite fit the rest of the episode. And it's like, what is even happening right now? But if I can kind of say, well, no, this is just like everyone's ideal or Mulder's ideal of how it would end. It's like, oh yeah, now I get it. Now I like it.
Yeah, exactly. And I would definitely say Mulder's ideal. I wouldn't say like everyone's ideal. I mean, the idea that everyone's following them, the whole town's going to the concert, like they're all there. He's surrounded by friends. Cher like picks him out of the crowd, like everything. And then, you know, the Mutato babies, which again, that's another problematic element, because then that makes me think that, oh, did they actually use Mutato's sperm or was this just kind of a accident, or is this like we've said, just in Mulder's mind what happens, like what he would like to see happen, because the reality of it is that Mutato's on his way to jail. And I think that is what that ending is, and I think it's almost over the, like we said, over the top crazy, maybe to make you think that. And I don't really hear that. I don't hear that argument getting tossed around a lot, to be honest, that it's a that the last part is a fantasy. All I really hear getting tossed around is people being pissed that they took this rapist to a Cher concert. That's all I hear. And I mean, I get so upset when I hear that, because I'm like, look, the entire idea of the episode, and this is another me getting really deep, I think that you don't really, that people don't really, they see things that are like, it's not just black and white. Which I can say that as trying to be cute, because the episode is black and white. But like, I think they're really trying to make you think that. I think they really are like, look, there's more than meets the eye to this story. And I think there's more than meets the eye to most of these stories that we see on this show.
Oh, that's true.
But I think that like, yeah, Mulder doesn't see things in black and white. And so I just, I love the idea that this is his sort of interpretation.
Yeah, I think that when you think of it that way, it makes total sense. It's one of those things that once I kind of realized it, I don't know whether it was some thing that I read on Twitter. It might have been one of your tweets at some point along the line. Mm-hmm. But someone kind of clicked me into, hey, this may actually be a fantasy sequence at the end. Once I started looking at it that way, it's like, oh yeah, how did I not see this before? It's not a far-fetched theory at all. Like, everything in that ending fits that 100%.
Absolutely.
When you, I think that was in fact the intention. And it makes it, like I said, it doesn't lessen it. It only heightens it, as far as I'm concerned. It makes me like it better because now it makes sense. It's like, oh, okay, now I get why it fits better in the episode. And it just, yeah, I love the idea that that's like Mulder's happy ending for him and Scully. Is like, that's like super shippy to me. So makes my heart happy.
You know, another thing too, it's always, yeah. I mean, and I think it's adorable because in this scene when we're going to talk about the dancing for a second, when he actually like asks her to dance or doesn't ask her, he doesn't even look at her. And I think it's so adorable because he can't look at her. He just puts his hand out and he smiles. But it seems so clear to me now that is emblematic of what Mulder wants to do.
And
what he never does.
Yeah, absolutely, dude.
I feel
just
like
hold your hand out. Come on,
just hold your hand out. Like, I feel like that. I feel like we've really hit upon something here, Jen.
Yeah,
and
we have.
I think I love this moment even more now.
I think I do too.
Wow.
Yeah, it's all about. And he's not like grabbing her or anything. He's just extending his hand to her, and he's not even looking at her. He's like too shy to even look at her.
Yeah.
And she's like, she's all in there. She's like, she hesitates for a second, but man, she's right in there.
I'm loving it, man.
They like, they kind of like meet in the middle kind of thing. They both reach for each other in the end.
Because doesn't the whole idea of them dancing, I mean, and as much as we love it, doesn't it feel out of place too?
Yes.
In the episode. It feels very weird and it comes out of nowhere. And I mean, and we know the dancing was an ad lib by David and Jillian, or David, whoever did it. But they originally were supposed to hold hands, which is another cute idea, and it would have been super shippy too. I'm really glad
that would have been great.
Yeah, but I'm really glad they did the dancing, because now I feel like I've reinterpreted this into like an even more shippy moment. Be still my heart.
Oh my gosh, isn't it great when we can ship things up even more than
How
we
is
have
that even possible
in the previous 25 years? There's what it says, Annie, is that there's no end. There's no limits to our shippy abilities.
No.
And no end to the depth of the subject matter given to us to provide the shippiness.
That's where the hope lies.
It's absolutely. Maybe there's hope. And I was just going to add that, probably a lot of folks know this already, that David Duchovny is on record as saying that this is, if he, at least as of, I think, the end of season 7, maybe, if he could end the X-Files, that scene is how he would like to end it.
Yes, he did say that.
And you can see why. That's actually a really good ending. That would have been a really good ending.
I honestly feel like that's sort of a veiled way of him telling us that we're right.
Oh, it's absolutely that.
Because it's not only David. That. It's not only David's favorite ending. That would be how Mulder would want it to end.
Absolutely. David and Mulder, they both ship it.
I seriously need to go into like a happy, shippy place right now. I don't even know if I can focus on the podcast.
I'm not sure if I can. I feel a little warm right now. Yeah. It's not. It's just like the warm fuzzies are like overtaking me right now. I don't know if I've got my analytical brain on anymore, but I can get there.
Well, you know,
we'll just take a moment of shippiness.
Let's take a moment of shippiness because we're about to dive into some shittiness.
Yeah. Okay. Really
good. No.
I like the way you did that.
Thank you. That was just on the fly.
That was awesome. Yeah.
Before we get into that aforementioned shittiness, I do want to bring up a cool sort of little bit of trivia. They actually tried to get Cher to be in the episode, and she was totally about it. She wanted to do it, and then she realized that they just wanted her to sing at the end, she said, "Here, I have a quote here." She said she passed on the cameo appearance performing as herself, a decision for which she later expressed regret. "I wanted them to ask me to come on and act. Then they just wanted me to come on and sing. Just to come on and be myself wasn't anything I wanted to do until I saw the finished episode. Had I foreseen the quality of it, I would have done it in a heartbeat."
Should have known, Cher. Just ask the X-Files. We would have told you. It's going to be a quality episode.
But I think that I love Cher. I love
Me too.
Cher.
So
the fact that she kind of came out and said, hey, well, I fucked up. I love that. I mean, and that's so Cher, and
it's
I love
very
it.
Very Cher. Yeah. I love that. Good for her.
But I love to hear that, like, yeah, she obviously was like, let them use all the music, do whatever you need to do. She really liked the episode. Yeah. So that was really great. And I do like, you know, talking about Cher for the moment, we previously talked about all the usage of her music on this episode, which was all great. But I do want to point out the idea that kind of only came to me recently, the fact that like Mutato really wanted the loving relationship that like Rocky Dennis hadn't had with Cher in that movie, and he had it with his father. Like they made that very clear that he did have it in a way. What it wasn't a mate, but he wasn't completely alone. You know what I mean? Like he had his father, and they seemed to have a loving relationship. You know, and so it kind of made me a little bit happier to think that okay, well, at least for the this part of his life, he had these sorts of bits of happiness. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know. I liked the idea that like they kind of made it like, and then they actually want. We should talk about this too. Actually, before we go into the bad stuff. The this is obviously a take on Frankenstein, right? Bride of Frankenstein or whatever. And they made a big deal in the script to which I wouldn't have known this because I'm not like a huge Mary Shelley fan. I'm not aware of like all of the stuff about Frankenstein's story. But the part where Mutato is carrying his father into the barn to bury him, that is supposed to be like Frankenstein carrying his bride. Like it's the shot, it's supposed to be like a similar shot, and it specifically calls for it in the script. And it's something that like maybe you would totally pick up on that if you're a fan, which I'm not. But I really like that sort of parallel because I just said, I think that's what they're trying to say is that, well, that was his bride and he died. And
So, I like that. That's really interesting. Yeah. I think if you're like a classic horror fan and you know those sort of original Frankenstein movies, you would see a lot of sort of cinematic parallels with this episode that would have gone right over my head because I don't know those movies. But I think that it definitely rewards those kind of horror fans who know those movies well. And I'm going to just like throw in a piece of trivia to show off that there was a good reason why I did an English degree. And a lot of folks might know this already too. But the title, of course, of the episode, Postmodern Prometheus, is taken from the title of the novel Frankenstein, whose full title is Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus. Mm-hmm. So that's where Postmodern Prometheus comes from, just in case anyone didn't know. There we go. Totally worth my 4 years of university right
now. And that's great. And I think that also kind of speaks to the idea of how they want to, they want to say like society, like now today's society is so different. They just want to be famous. You know, they just want to be on TV.
Yeah.
And I think that like that whole aspect of the episode kind of plays into the postmodern title really nicely.
It does. And that's also kind of, I love that whole, there's such a Jerry Springer thing through the whole episode. Yeah. Everyone wants to be on Jerry Springer. I've never heard his name mentioned so often on anything. Yeah. And it all feels really 90s to me watching that because Jerry Springer was, I think he's still, I don't know if he's still on TV now, but he was so big in the 90s. Like that whole daytime talk show thing, for our younger viewers that maybe weren't around for all that, was huge at that point. And that was like considered the greatest path to fame, was to be on something like Phil Donahue or Jerry Springer or something like that. So this feels like it's got a very 90s vibe, which makes me happy when I watch it, full of nostalgia.
Totally. And I mean, throughout the entire episode, Scully keeps telling Mulder, I can't believe you keep reducing these people to cultural stereotypes, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And then in the end, we find out that like he had every right to, because like you said, they all want to be on Jerry Springer. Like,
they really do.
So,
but a lot of people did back then.
Yeah. Yeah. The ends justify the means, I guess, in this sort of scenario.
It's all about you. It's all about the fame.
Anyway.
People still want to be famous. That hasn't changed. It's just now, I don't know, are we just YouTube? Is that how we're famous now? I don't know if you wanted to become famous. I'm not even sure if reality TV is the fastest way anymore. Maybe going on YouTube is.
Probably.
Viral.
It's so much easier to be famous now, though.
It is. Like everyone, we're kind of at that, everyone can be famous for 15 minutes point. Yep. I think we might be there.
We are. I think we really are there. And I mean, we've proven that with the internet. So
yeah, the internet has done all of that. Hooray. I love the internet. It's done so many wonderful things and quite a few bad things too, but I still love it.
Yeah, that's a really nice way to think of it.
Yeah.
So
are we going to talk about some, should we talk about some shitty stuff now?
Yeah, let's talk about some shitty stuff.
We've done the shippy. Now we're going to do the shitty. I feel like we need like some kind of transition music for this part.
Okay. I'll bring in some of the JJ's Diner music because I think would be appropriate. No.
That's good. They use, that's great music, isn't it? And I don't think I had remembered how much they use that theme throughout the episode. It's a great theme. It's great music.
Yeah. I'm glad that we had just recently discussed that.
And it definitely gives a kind of that that sort of weird vibe throughout the episode. There's not much of that sort of usual Mark Snow style music. It's that kind of wackadoodle circus music. And I had one other idea that I was going to point out, that it's interesting to me that the only color bits of the episode are the very beginning and very end, where we see
the cover and then the back of
comic book, which does kind of lend itself to like an interpretation that this whole story is kind of a comic book story.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see that folks might want to use that as an argument for why this is not like a quote unquote real story, like not technically part of canon, maybe didn't really happen kind of thing, because you do have that argument that everything that happened in black and white is a comic book story. I don't see it that way personally, but I can see why there's an argument to be made about that.
I think that everything going on up till the last sequence, it feels real enough that it could, I mean, especially when you stack it up against all the other shit that they deal with, it doesn't feel that much more bizarre to
me. No, I mean, there's a lot of weirdo episodes. I mean, if we're going to write this off as being too weird to be a real episode, then we're going to have to do the same with every episode and most of the Vince Gilligan episodes. So
yeah,
you can't write them all. Can't write them all off.
Stylistically weird, but in terms of the plot, maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not so much.
And I mean, like, even the acting is not, like, super over the top most of the time. I mean, there's, like, quite good characters.
Yeah.
I think Izzy's great, and Izzy's mom is great, too. So it's, you know, it received Emmy nominations for Chris Carter for directing, which makes total sense.
Yeah.
I don't know how he didn't win or who he lost to, but that sounds like an injustice to me.
Yeah.
It also got an Emmy nomination for writing, which I find interesting because I don't generally think of this like as being like a super strongly written episode, but clearly the Emmy voters saw differently. So it's not just a well-shot episode, but officially a well-written episode too, apparently.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Well, we were teasing shitty stuff, and then we started not talking about not shitty stuff. So I think
I was procrastinating.
I wanted to clarify that we weren't, the Mark Snow's music is not shitty stuff. Just making sure that's clear. So I think
let's get that on the record.
We want to talk about briefly, just because I feel like this is a good episode to do it in, because of the way that this topic is treated in this episode. The idea of what we, I would say what X-Files have been known to expect on this show, taking away, you know, consent of women's bodies and using them reproductively in ways without their consent. They call it medical rape. You could call it whatever you want to call it. They do this a lot on this show.
Mm-hmm. They do.
And, before I talk about my feelings, I would like to hear your feelings, Jen, on just in general.
On this throughout the X-Files?
I guess.
Or should I start with this episode, or should we start big into something specific?
No, talk about the whole, because
it's all connected.
Yeah.
Well, you know, talk about all connected. I don't think I remembered until I was looking at this week that right after this episode, what's the very next two episodes, but Christmas Carol and Emily.
Yep.
And same exact subject matter. The whole story, again, is about a woman being impregnated without her consent, except in this case, the woman is Scully. But it's handled so very differently because it's super serious. And like at one point, Mulder actually uses the term medical rapist and like beats on that doctor, which is like, yeah, get in there, Mulder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that we have essentially three episodes in a row with this subject matter is like, And then, you know, we get the same subject coming up again in Small Potatoes. And of course, sadly, in season 11 with My Struggle 3 and 4.
Well, I would argue that it happens at least a dozen times, but yes,
it
sure.
happens a lot.
I mean, on at least a dozen episodes, I would say that this is a topic, but
for sure, to varying degrees, it's almost like it does kind of feel a little bit like an obsession after a while. Like Chris Carter clearly is fascinated by this concept.
Okay, wait, but I need to stop you there. Okay,
go ahead.
Because I get really kind of annoyed when people say that, because it's like, this is something that's existed on the show from the beginning. Anytime you're doing a sci-fi show about alien abductions and eugenics and science experiments, which this is what this show is about. It's a science fiction show. Yes. When you want to do this, you've got to use women. Like, I'm sorry, but we're the ones with the uteruses. We're the ones with the ova. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure if Chris Carter could make Mulder pregnant, he would have gladly done so. You know?
Right, to be honest.
So I guess when people say like, oh, he's just so obsessed with the feminine reproductive system, I'm just like, well, no, it's just that's the plot of the show. That's kind of what they're trying to drive at with like these are the horrific things that happen on this show. It doesn't necessarily mean he's like obsessed with women's reproductive. Like I don't know. It's just this is a show about alien abductions. It's a show about government intervention, science experiments, creating new hybrids. Like that's what the show is about. And so I'm like that's kind of like getting mad that Chris Carter's obsessed with aliens. To me, that argument doesn't make any sense.
I would agree to you, except that he seems to insist on bringing it into episodes like this that explicitly Mulder actually says at one point, I don't think this is aliens. And yet we still have women being impregnated without their consent. And it is a Chris Carter story through and through. So it seems like he never misses an opportunity to bring this theme back. And then again, it's just something that just seems to come up again and again. And I agree. It's hard to avoid when we're talking about, because alien abduction always has had a sort of undertone of sort of screwing around with our sexuality and reproduction.
I mean, alien probes has been a thing.
Alien probes,
well before the X Files.
So I'm not going to blame them for that, because that's inevitably going to be part of the story. And I don't think it's a badly done story for the most part until season 11 rolls around. But it seems to pop up an awful lot. And I think it's something to do with the fact that we get like 3 episodes in a row about this subject just seems a little weird to me. It does seem to come up, I don't know, more than I would like it to. It's not a subject that I'd like to see revisited all that frequently. It's something that to me, it's like, if they had just kept it within the mythology episodes, then I would have been like, shoulder shrug, of course. Yeah, like you say, it's aliens. It's kind of how it's going to be. Body horror is like a thing. But I don't know. It's just, do we really need to go to that well more than absolutely necessary? Maybe we should just, you know, stick to other wells, because it's not a well I like love. So,
well, I mean,
I just feel like it's overdone slightly.
I don't love the well of murder and assault and pedophilia and all the other terrible things that this show deals with on a regular basis. But this is a show that's a drama that's going to have conflict. It's going to have terrible things happen. Like I said, like, I think the huge failing of what they did, especially in season 11, was just, you know, allowing your characters to have an appropriate reaction to the horrible things that are happening to them. I don't have anything against doing horrible things to characters on a fictional television show. Like, I just, like, I can't sit here and tell you that I have a problem with it.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? Like, I guess I just want to be like, this is the show I signed up for. Like, I've known since the very beginning that this is something that's going to happen on this show. And so it's just like, when it happens, I go, oh, okay, we're doing this again. You know what I mean? It doesn't, I don't know, especially, I mean, Emily and Christmas Carol, it feels different to me, because, I mean, those are like test tube babies. You know, it's not like they're, it's not like My Struggle For. It's not the same thing. It's not like NME. It's not like that.
Oh, God, no. And yet I find Christmas Carol and Emily seems to be the, when this subject comes up, it seems to be the one where it's most sort of directly addressed. And we seem to get like the most outrage from the characters about it.
Yes.
More so than any other time. It's the episode where it's sort of most clearly stated, this is not okay. This is wrong. This is what it is. Let's call it what it is. And this is horrible. There's no two ways around it. There's nothing comedic about it. There's nothing amusing about it.
Right.
There's no excuses. It's all bad. And so I kind of, I'm totally fine with that treatment of the subject matter. It's when it starts to show up in the comedic episodes, I get a tiny bit uncomfortable with that.
Let's talk about Small Potatoes for a minute here.
Okay.
Which again is a completely different, it's a different idea because this isn't, we're not talking about like doing experiments. We're talking about a dude that just wants to get laid. Like, I mean, if I can make the argument that Great Mutado is not a rapist because we have no actual evidence, I can make the argument, and I don't think anyone would disagree with me, that Eddie Van Blunt is a rapist.
Yeah, straight up.
And I mean, to me, I find, and everyone will say it's perfect. I've had this argument with people before. They'll say it's perfectly fine because he goes to jail at the end. That's what everybody says. And I kind of disagree with that because I feel like Small Potatoes does, and I think it's a fun episode. I like watching it because, again, this is a fictional television show and I can suspend my disbelief for all the things that I feel might be kind of icky. But I think they treat it far less carefully in Small Potatoes than they do in a lot of the other episodes. Like, they treat it as something that maybe isn't quite that big of a deal. And they also kind of brush over the fact completely that five women have essentially been raped and they don't have anything to say about it, you know?
Yeah. I agree. Small Potatoes is definitely problematic. The thing that I think makes, at least in Small Potatoes, one thing I'll say in its defense is that, I mean, they straight out say that he was a rapist. And we are to, like, because I think Skinner even says that.
Right.
I think he actually says he was a rapist.
Yes.
And it, like, we are to believe that. And we, as the audience, are being instructed. And sometimes it is, I think, maybe instructed, because that was like season 4. So we're talking like 95, 96 kind of thing. And so I think, honestly, back then, having been like a grown woman in my late 20s at that stage of my life, people needed, and maybe even people do still today, sometimes people need to have it explained to them in clear words. This is rape, by the way, because sometimes people don't get that. Sometimes viewers won't get that unless Skinner sits there and tells them, by the way, this is rape. And
right.
It's like, oh, okay. So at least they spell it out. And at least we are not to think that, oh, well, shoulder shrug, it's okay.
Well,
I don't
feel
like it's like there's no excuses being made here. It's not being brushed aside. The fact that it's played for comedy throughout most of the episode is awkward, to say the least. But at least there's, I think, the message from the show is this is not okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a subjective thing.
I think it is subjective.
Your mileage may vary.
I think your mileage does vary because I feel like you and I feel differently about this versus the Postmodern Prometheus. I feel like they did it worse in Small Potatoes because, like you said, you quite literally said, well, at least Skinner's saying that it's rape. Skinner is telling us what we all already know. Like, I would agree that people know that this is rape. Okay.
I'm not sure they do.
Okay. And that I have a problem with that because of the way Eddie Van Blunt is portrayed. He's portrayed as sort of a comedic villain. Okay.
Right.
He's not supposed to be this sort of horrifying rapist. He's supposed to be kind of funny. This whole episode's kind of funny. Even when they're questioning him and he's kind of like, what's the harm? Nobody got hurt. What's the harm? And then later when Skinner says that line that you're saying, he's a rapist, he kind of rolls his eyes. He really does. Yeah. He's like, oh.
He does. I think he literally almost rolls.
He rolls his eyes. And I find that kind of offensive because I'm like, look, we're not supposed to be on this guy's side. Like, I get it. He's a bad guy, but they don't hammer that. They don't treat it that way. This is a comedy episode, and we're supposed to kind of find Eddie Van Blunt a little. He's supposed to be kind of funny. I'm not going to use the word lovable, but he's played by Darren Morgan. I mean, he's got like the little baby face, and you know,
he kind of does.
So I don't think that if we're going to sit here and say that okay, this they treated it badly in Postmodern Prometheus, but they treated it fine in Small Potatoes, I'm going to disagree with that because I don't think they did. I think that Small Potatoes is kind of guiltier because the entire episode is lighthearted, whereas I would disagree with that in the postmodern Prometheus world.
I totally see what you're saying, and I think this kind of highlights something else that I was thinking about, which is that the degree to which you find an episode problematic is very directly correlated to how much you like the episode. And I am willing to kind of find reasons to like Small Potatoes just because I like that episode.
Oh, I still love Small Potatoes.
And so,
just to be clear.
Yeah, of course. And so I will find sort of ways. It's like a cognitive dissonance thing where right. I can't like an episode that's about that treats rape in a cavalier way. So I have to do some kind of mental gymnastics to make it okay to me. Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily make for a sound argument always. But this is an ongoing issue we have today with fiction and with art in general, mm-hmm. especially when you're looking at something from the past. And there's been so many changes in the culture with regard to this issue just in the last few years, but let alone going back, 20 odd years. And so when we're looking at things from the past like this, it's things that you used to love, maybe. It's hard to know how to look at them now in the context of today. And so when I watch an episode like Small Potatoes, which, I've always loved because, my man, Vince Gilligan, I watch it today and it's like, ugh, this is problematic. And so I right. kind of look for reasons to let it off the hook. Whereas for an episode like Postmodern Prometheus, I don't have like an emotional attachment to that episode. I sort of, I kind of like objectively see it as a well-made episode, but I don't like have a love for it. Mm-hmm. And so it's easier for me to kind of say, yeah, it's problematic because I don't have anything.
You don't have a reason
stake.
To defend it.
Yeah. I don't have a reason to defend it. And so to me, when I look at postmodern Prometheus, and the reason why I have a bigger problem with that is because to me, there's just a bit too much in terms of, hey, it's all fine because it turned out okay in the end. I mean, we have the great Mutado, saying, like you said earlier, in our trespasses, we gave you a loving son. And that kind of idea does show up repeatedly, of course, in the X-Files. I mean, we see that in Small Potatoes. It's kind of implied to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And we see it. I mean, that's sometimes we get that kind of implication even with Scully. And William came out of it kind of thing. And so a lot of these episodes, there is this implication that as long as something good comes of it, clean hands, it's all fine. No harm, no foul. You've got a kid out of it at least. Mm. And that makes me a little bit uncomfortable because I don't feel like there's enough emphasis placed in Postmodern Prometheus that this is a bad thing. And it's just the way the story is structured. The story is about the great Mutado. It's very much about his experience and about his loneliness and about his story. And this idea of, what about the women? That's not cool. It doesn't really fit in with that narrative particularly well. That's not the story Chris Carter wants to tell.
Right.
And so it's not really, there's no point at which it's sort of spelled out, hey, this was really like not okay. He does say it was wrong.
I can agree with you. I can agree with you for that. But I feel like people will take what you just said instead of blaming, say, Chris Carter, although people love to do that all the time, they're blaming the great Mutato. I think that's right. I think the blame is being misdirected. Whereas especially like you said, since the clarity was not there of actually what was going on. Yeah, something horrible happened to these women, but he's not the one who did it. What I mean? So, and you're right, because this is his story and we're supposed to be focused on him and we're supposed to be focused on the tragedy of him, the women's, the problem that happens with all the women, it has been glossed over. I would agree with that completely. But I would make the same argument for Small Potatoes. I would say that none of the women's, why do I keep saying women's? None of the women's voices, I should say, are being heard.
True.
I mean, even Scully literally doesn't say anything when she finally discovers Eddie Van Blunt is on top of her. She kind of doesn't even have words.
That's
a
good point.
There's nothing. And again, it's strange because it's the same sort of problem that we get in My Struggle 4, where it's like Scully is not given a voice. These women are not being given a voice. And that's
absolutely
the main problem.
The worst example of, the woman concerned not being given a voice for me is that scene in Emily where Mulder is talking to, the judge or some legal official about, he's like, he's trying to stick up for Scully's application to adopt Emily.
Yeah.
And Scully is there in the room, and Mulder is just sitting there talking about everything horrible that's been done to Scully and how all of her ova were stolen. She looks completely surprised, like mm-hmm. this is all news to her. And these two dudes just sit there and talk about Scully. And I understand that's the setup of the scene, but it's just very awkward that this whole scene, Scully is sitting there. She literally does not say one single thing for the whole scene.
Yeah, no.
The guys are talking about her the whole time. It seems to be a revelation to her and not a good way.
No.
And it's very, like, talk about, like, having your voice taken away. That's just very
awkward.
Yeah,
that is a very, very problematic scene. I don't like that either. But again, it does... It is something that does occasionally happen. I feel like it happens in most cases when it comes to this.
It happens a lot. I mean, if you could make the argument that it's just illustrating reality. I don't know if they meant to illustrate that reality or if they just participated in it. But it is actually, you know, this is what can happen. And this is often what does happen. And shout out to Gillian Anderson, who does an amazing job in that scene without any lines, with just her expression in terms of how she's reacting to what's being said. Mm-hmm. She says so much without saying anything. And she's perfect, and that scene is another example of it. So she's not what's wrong with that scene, that's for damn sure.
No, I mean, and I think she's had to deal with that a lot.
She's good at it now.
Yeah, but I think...
So that's, I guess, the problem that I have with Postmodern Prometheus at the end of the day is not only... You're right, I mean, the women don't have a role here, nor do they usually... I guess I can kind of more easily forgive that if, again, I feel like, again, it's kind of like... We were back in the 90s and we needed to kind of, sometimes society needed these things spelled out. And if they had at some point spelled it out and said, this was, even though good things came of it, clearly it was wrong. If it was just kind of specified just a little more clearly,
right.
This was not cool. And that farmer guy who just seems so sweet and gentle is not necessarily a good guy. He is the villain here as well. I think I would have forgiven a lot if that had just been specified, but you know, that was not Chris Carter's concern. He wasn't going to take time. This wasn't about teaching the audience a lesson or anything like
that.
Yeah,
no, I think you're right. And I think that maybe I can completely agree with you that I think that's sort of the failing of this episode. And like I said, I just think the blame is mislaid. I think when you ask people why they don't like this episode, they're going to immediately say, oh, because the rapist went to a Cher concert. That's going to be their response when that's not the case, again, like I've already said. Yeah. But I think you're right. I would agree with you over and over again that the women in these stories are not given a voice because they're not the central part of the story. They're sort of just plot devices. And that's how they're being treated. And I mean, to be fair, every single week on this show, someone is being murdered as a plot device. So, I mean, again, it's just kind of when you weigh this sort of stuff, I mean, what topics are important to be discussing and what's important to be discussing in 1997, as opposed to what's important to be discussing now. And I mean, that's the argument that I will continue to come back to as to why this plot was sort of revisited in 2018. Which, again, I don't even think it's a problem with in terms of the scope of the show. It's true to the show. That sort of thing doesn't bother me. It's just the audacity of making that decision is kind of what bothers me.
I think that, and when I think about watching this back in 1997, it honestly didn't bother me at the time. I was not as woke then as I am now.
Right.
And that was the culture, of course, of 1997. Those out there who are closer to my age will know this. I imagine that if you watched this show, this episode, in today's milieu for like the first time, say you watched that show for the first time, even like in like the last 10 years or so, I would think you'd have a different reaction to it than my reaction to it was in 1997, just because I was in that culture of 1997 of not really being as aware of these issues as we should have been. And while I'm sure some folks picked up on it back then, I didn't, and probably quite a few people didn't. And so that was the time that it was in. Not only was it just like, oh, well, you know, looking back on it, those kind of things were done. They were done and they were kind of like acceptable in a way that they shouldn't have been, but they were, unfortunately.
Right.
And so it didn't bother me in 1997. I just, I had other reasons not to love the episode. Well, like I said, was just kind of like, it just didn't really do anything for me on an emotional level, generally speaking.
Right.
But I honestly had no, like, sort of moral objections to it until, like, you know, much more recent years. And then it kind of, like, I was like, oh, God, was it like this back in 1997? Why did this not bother me at the time? It really should have.
No, absolutely.
But,
like,
you know,
I said,
that's what happens when you watch a show over a 25-year span.
Right.
Your feelings towards certain episodes will change to some degree.
Yeah, like I said, even when I watch something, anything from the 90s, I can't. Yeah. Right now in 2019, I cannot watch a movie that was made in the 90s without cringing at something.
Yeah, that the 90s were bad for that.
Yeah, that was misunderstood or just treated, you know, flippantly, yeah. Like, or glossed over in a way that would not have been okay today.
Yeah, we're just so much more aware of those issues today than we were back then. Thank God. We're getting there. We're still not where we need to be, but we are getting there, thank God.
Definitely.
And I'm glad it's an issue. I'm glad that it's something that we're talking about, because goodness knows it's something that needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that it's something that people are talking about. It's just, you know, it's always good to have a healthy debate about this sort of thing. But one thing I was going to add as well about what you were saying about, you know, what stories Chris Carter wants to tell, I was just going to mention about the stories that he seems most interested in telling, and of course we see this time and again, is about fathers and sons. And this is another episode that has that as its focus.
Yeah.
And so he's very interested in fathers and sons. He's not particularly interested, I think, in mothers and their children beyond the point they give birth, at least. And so that's where he comes from as a storyteller, I think, and that's what he likes to focus on. And hey, it's his sandbox. He can play in it any way he wants to, and this episode definitely exemplifies where his interests lie. And that was one of the issues I had kind of with my struggle for too, is that it was all about fathers and sons. That was the story that Chris Carter wanted to tell, but it just wasn't the story I was particularly interested in.
Well, and I think what my argument would be against that is that I think from day one with William was a mother and son story, and Mulder never got a father story.
That's true.
So yeah. I don't have a problem with that in any way, shape, or form, besides the fact that my working theory is that Scully had already sort of begun to let it go by my struggle for, and that's kind of what made everything a little bit easier for her.
Yeah.
Whereas Mulder wasn't there yet. I feel like kind of that's the natural progression of what happened. Yeah. I wish it had been all laid out much clearer. I really do. I think that he focused enough on the idea of Scully wanting to be a mother for a long time.
Yeah.
I think
you're right that Mulder gets quite short shrift as a father until My Struggle For, and then that it's his story essentially. My Struggle For is Mulder's story.
Yes.
And I think if we had a season 12, you know, in the right world where Gillian Anderson would be there as well, of course, then I probably wouldn't bother me as much. But because it wound up being the last episode, it just made me sad that it was not a more balanced episode in terms of being a Mulder and Scully story. But again, Chris Carter wanted to tell a story about fathers and sons with Mulder and William and Cigarette Smoking Man, and that's what he did, and that's very true to the X-Files, and that's very much what postmodern Prometheus is as well.
Right. I agree. I think that's a really good way to, you know, wrap it up, unless you have anything else to say about
I don't think this episode. I do. I feel like we gave it a pretty good analysis overall. I'm liking it better all the time. I'm always going to have issues with it. And so that's always going to be, I've never grown attached to it enough to, like I said before, to sort of overcome the issues. And now that I have issues with it, I'm probably never going to sort of get super attached to it, but I am always going to admire it as a very well-made episode. There's no question about that in my mind. And it's just, again, you know, Chris Carter going out there, doing something bold that he never did before or since. It's the one and only black and white episode. Mm-hmm. And he pulls it off. You know, he does these crazy ideas, does them once, and does a brilliant job.
Yeah.
And my hat's off to him, because that's amazing talent. And I appreciate that.
It does seem like when he takes risks, they pay off.
They really do. Yeah, he's got a real good instinct for for wacky things to try, because he seems to make it work.
My only closing comment I think I'll make on this episode is that, you know, if you're one of those people out there who are not a fan of it for all the reasons that we've talked about, like maybe just give it another watch or rethink of it in the way of maybe the last few minutes is kind of Mulder's, I don't want to say fantasy, but Mulder's ideal ending. Yeah. And I think even if you have a problem, you as a listener have a problem with the Mutato kind of getting compassion, I don't think anyone can argue that that's how Mulder would feel. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yeah.
So, I mean, if that's the story that we're being told, and if that's kind of what he wants, which is what he says, I want a different ending, I want to see the writer, then I feel like it's true to his character, and, like, the, you know, I can kind of deal with it like that. If you just think of it that way, maybe it'll make you think differently about the episode. I'd be curious to hear if anybody, you know, what people have to say. I know people have a lot to say about this episode, so please hit us up on Twitter, at XFDpodcast. Maybe we'll think of some sort of poll to do to start some conversation, but I'm sure that people will have things to say. Please say it. Say it.
Yep. Do it.
Thanks, you guys, for listening, and we will be back with you in a couple more weeks for another episode of X-Files Diaries. Bye.
Bye.